I've never gotten a here's how to work with me. I've never gotten any kind of like, here's the ways that you can get a hold of me, and here's what you can talk to me about, and here's what you can't, and none of that. Like, I've never gotten any of that. I feel like that would be helpful.
Hello, and welcome to the Agile Attorney Podcast. I'm John Grant. This is my very first real episode of the podcast. If you want to hear my reasons for finally putting this fancy microphone to good use, you can go back and listen to the introduction episode at the beginning of the podcast feed. I'm kicking off my podcast with a series of episodes I'm calling The Voice of the Client. And today you'll hear from Lynn, a marketing consultant in the Midwest who's in the later stages of a custody battle. I'm really excited for you to hear her opinions about her lawyers and the legal process in general. She's incredibly perceptive, and she does a great job articulating her frustrations, both within the context of her own case and their implication for larger society. One of the things that struck me during the interview, though, is that she has some traits that a lot of attorneys I know would view as red flags. She's had multiple lawyers, and her frustrations with the early ones have caused her to second-guess her current attorney, something that I'm sure is at least a little frustrating to that lawyer. What comes through to me, though, is a mother who is passionate about her kids, is fully engaged in her own case, is totally stressed out about it, and yet is still able to view things as a citizen who thinks the system should be working better for everyone. I also couldn't help but pick her brain a little as a marketing professional, so as a bonus, you'll get some useful tips on that front. Spoiler alert, a good client experience is really good marketing. At the end, you'll also get an update on Lynn's case. So be sure to listen to the entire episode right after this message. Are you a little suspicious of the cult of hustle? You know, those so-called business gurus who talk about hypergrowth or 10xing your business if you just give yourself over to the hype and buy into the privilege of following their plan? Don't get me wrong, I am all about growth and setting goals and putting in the work to meet them. But if you're like me, you'd probably prefer working smarter, not harder, whenever possible. And that's where bottleneck theory comes in. And I won't give you the full lesson on bottleneck theory. You can find that on my website at agileattorney.com. But here's the high-level thing you need to know. Your law practice is made up of three high-level pipelines that work together to power your success. You have a getting the work pipeline that's made up of the sales and marketing and outreach efforts. You have a doing the work pipeline that's where you deliver the work that your client is asking for. And you have a getting paid pipeline where the actual exchange of value happens. Right now, and really at any time, only one of those pipelines contains a bottleneck that is preventing your practice from being more successful. And yes, I said the bottleneck. There can only be one. You might feel like there are a million things in your practice that you'd like to improve, but just like every chain has a weakest link, every practice has a single worst bottleneck. Here's the good news. If you can improve the flow of work at that bottleneck, then you will improve the success of your entire enterprise. And that makes sense. If you shore up the weakest link, then the whole chain gets stronger. But the real power in bottleneck theory comes from this second part, which is easy to understand intellectually, but can be a lot harder to put into practice. It goes like this. Any improvement that you make to part of your system that isn't your bottleneck won't help. So think about it. If your bottleneck is in your delivery pipeline, but you do something to improve your marketing or your intake, then all you're going to do is slam more cars into an ever-worsening traffic jam. In other words, you can spend good money, not to mention your time and attention and effort, investing in something that, even if it works exactly as you hoped, will actually make things worse. Of course, if you fix something downstream of your bottleneck, it won't matter because most of your work is just going to get stuck before it gets there. So the key to working smarter and not harder is first finding your bottleneck, which isn't always easy, and then having a plan and a method for improving the flow of work that's getting stuck there. And that's where I can help. I've developed a 90-minute workshop that I'm calling my Bottleneck Breakthrough Jam. It's designed to quickly assess the overall health of your practice from a strategy and operations perspective, help you identify that one key bottleneck that is holding back your practice, and leave you with one or two concrete steps you can take to open up that bottleneck and get things flowing more smoothly. I guarantee that you will come out of our session feeling empowered and energized about your practice, and knowing exactly what to do to get to the next level. And I literally mean guarantee. If you aren't satisfied after we're done, I will refund your money. Now, we're not going to 10x you overnight, and we're not going to fix all the things in 90 minutes. But you will leave with an actionable plan for fixing the right thing that will have an outsized impact on your productivity. To learn more, go to agileattorney.com/BBJ for Bottleneck Breakthrough Jam. That's agileattorney.com/BBJ. You're going to love how much better you feel about your practice when we're done. And yes, I guarantee it. Today, I'm speaking with Lynn, and Lynn has got some recent experiences, in fact, current experiences, as far as I remember, working with some attorneys. And so thank you, Lynn, and thanks for coming on the show today. Could you just give me your Wheel of Fortune bio? Who are you, and where are you from, and what do you do?
My name is Lynn. I'm in Bloomington, Indiana. I've got 4 kids and 2 ex-husbands, and I'm a marketing consultant.
All right. The thing we're going to talk about today is your issue with at least one of those ex-husbands, correct?
Yes.
So why don't you give me just like a little bit of background without too much detail about the legal issue that you're kind of in the middle of right now?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So this is with my first ex-husband. We've been divorced for 10 years now. So, of course, family law. The current issue is regaining custody after moving out of state. So in a what is a now 2-year battle for custody, it looks like it'll end up in full custody. Actually, the hearing's Friday. So by the time this goes live, we'll know. And maybe you can put that in your post.
Yeah. But, well, that's great. Well, and I think it's going to be, I'm really glad to sort of capture you in the heat of the moment to the extent that it's not too stressful for you.
Right. Oh, no, it is. I've got the stress acne, and I've already bought like the anti-diarrheals, and like I'm gaining tons of weight, and I'm going to hope that I can still fit into my dress. I'm going to try that on tonight and make sure that my court dress still fits. So.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm so sorry. But yeah, I get it. Yeah. Well, welcome to the COVID era. I've got children bouncing off the walls upstairs. And that'll be in the podcast, too. So tell me about how you got to where this particular dispute started. And I'm interested both in the facts of it, but also like, tell me about how you were feeling about your situation before you decided to hire a lawyer.
Oh my gosh. So this has been a high conflict situation from the get-go. So feeling frustrated I've always been frustrated, you know, to try to co-parent with someone who doesn't want to co-parent, yet the courts and everyone are saying, just smile more, just be nicer. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I even had a parenting coordinator at one point be like, well, you should just, you know, he's going to be emotional, so just be nice. And it's like, well, this insurance is too expensive. Can we talk about reducing the cost of insurance? Or, you know, just things like that. I have a child who's possibly autistic, you know, hasn't gotten the care he needs. So now he like can open a, you know, use a can opener at 11, you know, so right. It's just frustration at feeling powerless. And I would say powerless is probably the biggest frustration. But what led to this case, so this matter has been going on for 2 years. I'm on my, is it fourth lawyer? Third lawyer for this case, okay. this going back to court. I mean, the whole thing's been 10 years off and on, but this one's 2 years. Finally on my third lawyer. So before I started, or before I launched it, you know, I had my son, he was diagnosed with anxiety, it was previously filed too. So like my previous lawyer completely botched it there as well, but I won't talk about that. This is just 2 years with this batch. She pulled it. It a mess. So with this one, we had a CPS. So I pulled it, or she pulled it. She recommended I pull it. And there was like a lull in the fall. And if you talk to any family lawyers, apparently the fall is like fun time. So we had a CPS incident where, I don't want to give too many details, but my ex-husband grabbed my daughter grabbed her arms behind her back and told her that that's what the cops would do if she ever spoke, or if she tried to like tell them like about what was going on and that she was unhappy and whatnot. She was saying she wanted to live with me. And so I was trying to broach that conversation with him. And he immediately, that's parent alienation. It's not parental, that's parent alienation. And so he immediately went on these tirades, refused to talk about it. So we had the CPS or DCS, I guess, investigation. And my daughter's unhappy. My children were starting to become more unhappy at that time, more anxiety. My daughter was starting to like, you know, she's pulling her hair, not eating, things like that. So
A lot of stress.
He was taking her phone. There were a lot of fights. It was getting more volatile. So it was like, now's the time.
And this was, and the two of you had shared custody and shared parenting time?
Before I left the state. And I left the state for a job, a temporary job. And my lawyer at the time, who was a modest means referral, there aren't that many low means, at, you know, but this is one of the ones I got a referral, and he's like 50 an hour or something, told me that it was impossible to maintain any custody being out of state, refused to fight for me in any way, and we settled. So I lost all custody, physical and legal.
Oh boy.
And
okay.
Both of my ex-husbands decided to do that at the same time. And my lawyer at the time ruled for both. And this was before I like figured out you had to be your own lawyer to get help. So very frustrating. And I mean, as a client, what makes me so angry now looking back is I trusted my lawyers. Like, no one ever told me, hey, you can appeal a case if you don't settle, or that appeals are possible, or hey, here are the facts and here's what's possible. And here's what, like, I never had any at the lower tiers, I say lower tiers, like at billables, had anybody say, okay, this is the strategy. These are your options. I mean, I never even had anyone sit down with me and go, hey, Lynn, you started off in a bad place because you were younger, didn't have means, whatever. Here's what you need. Here's the ducks you need to have in a row to get to a place where you can regain custody from an abuser. Like, no one ever sat down with me, even though I asked for it. No one could sit down with me and give me that kind of plan. But anyway, back to your question. Yeah, super frustrating. There was a lot of volatility. So finally got the lawyer who pulled it to, you know, refile something. And then I had another lawyer, the second lawyer, and I fired her because she wanted more money, even though I paid her a flat fee supposedly for the whole thing. My next lawyer I had for at least 6 months.
Let me actually,
sorry, go ahead.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Because I'd like to pull at that string for a minute. I mean, yeah. Tell me about, how did you find the person that was charging you a flat fee?
And I don't know if this is legal. So I was in child support court. I used to have $30,000 a year in child support orders that I had to pay. And I've never made more than $75,000 a year.
Right.
So a considerable chunk of change that I don't know how it got calculated, which leads to, I have extraordinarily strong opinions about child support in general. So I met her through child support enforcement court. She was then, what do they call it? Public defender, but she was also like poaching clients who didn't qualify for public defender services, which again, I don't know if that's legal.
okay.
She's no longer doing that.
I don't either.
Yeah. So I met her, she quoted me a flat fee to modify. Cause of course, I mean, if you can't pay, you know, $1,200 a month in child support, right, well, I think my total was $2,500, but for one of the dads, it was $1,200.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, well, you need to modify. Cause the child support enforcement courts, Title 4D can't modify. Like they looked at me in the face and said, yeah, this is the highest order we've ever seen, but we can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop choosing child support over life is what I was told at one point to my face.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was fun. So I met her there. She quoted me a flat fee. It was like $3,500 or something. Thought it was very reasonable. Mm-hmm. But then she also charged me per appearance. So $200 per appearance.
Was this written, was this laid out in a fee agreement or an email? I mean, was it clear what the flat fee covered and what it didn't, and that there were going to be these add-on charges?
No, it wasn't clear that there were add-on charges too. And she threatened me like, hey, if you don't, you know, pay now, it's, you know, I'm going to pull everything. She actually did threaten to pull everything towards the end when she quoted me the new. So we did another one, a second one. Like a second filing petition for custody and modification of child support. And she wanted another like $3,500 or $4,000. And I paid a portion of it. And then she kept asking for more. And I was like, I know you already charged me. Why are we doing this again?
Right.
And then she threatened to pull absolutely everything. And I got a different lawyer who I guess was a friend of hers and got her to stop.
Got it. So you parted ways with that lawyer.
Yes.
And the lawyer you found after that is the one you're working with now?
No, this is another one. That
okay.
one, this other one I found through Google. He had some testimonials. They were old, but I wasn't paying attention to that at the time. I was like, oh, you know, he seems really personable. I talked to him and he seemed super personable. He actually knew the opposing party that my ex-husband has had for 10 years. So I was like, great. He knows this particular lawyer that I'm working with and how frustrating he can be to work with. This is good. You know, that he has mm-hmm. experience. And he's like, yeah, I have a good relationship with this attorney, you know, no problem. You know, told me all the things that I wanted to hear, took notes in, you know, his matters software and okay, great. He's on it. Only charged $500 at the time. He told me, yeah, it's, you know, maybe it's going to be like $500 a month, you know, but I try to keep it reasonable and we'll just kind of chip away at this. Okay, good.
Okay. And was that part of
yes.
did he give you a written fee agreement? Okay.
Well, there was for a per hour. But the thing is, he never charged me after that because he didn't do anything after that. So I had a year where he hadn't filed discoveries.
Hmm. Okay.
I kept asking and apparently he hadn't filed. I mean, it took me 2 months just to get him to get off the case.
And when you asked him, what sorts of things would you hear back?
nothing. Like I would send emails, I'd hear nothing back. I'd ask him in person and he'd kind of give me this nervous grin. And yeah, I don't remember specifically what he said, but it was never like, yeah, it was sent or yeah, I'm on it or anything like that. It was evasive.
Got it. Okay. And so you decided to switch again.
Yes.
And it took you a little while to untangle from that lawyer. So tell me quickly about that.
Yeah. Okay. So first I interviewed a bunch of lawyers over the period of a month. I kind of knew what my budget was that I could pay someone. Unfortunately, we had a hearing coming up and it was like 4 weeks out. And it becomes very expensive to hire a new lawyer and even to get anybody to take what I've learned is called a hot case, right? A case where there's lots of contention and it's high conflict. Nobody wants to take those cases. And the people who do probably don't know what those entail or aren't equipped. So it kind of becomes this catch-22 of if you find someone too quickly, they're probably not prepared. And the ones who can handle it are either too expensive or already booked. So I interviewed a bunch of lawyers, finally found one, a female woman who I still have. So she, all she does is family law. And, you know, I finally figured out, okay, I want someone who's not doing DUIs on the side. I want someone who actually knows a little bit about family law and who, you know, won't be, oh, this is great when I send them an appellate case or something. Like I would hope that they've seen it already. But so she met all those bars, you know, she hadn't worked with the opposing counsel, but she was backed by a firm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she was affordable. So, okay, this is, and she was willing to work with me on the retainer. So that was good. So I asked her, okay, what would it take to get started? And she's like, well, you know, you need to have your other, you know, lawyer off the case and, you know, just, you know, let me know. And so I asked the lawyer, hey, can you, I don't say I'm finding other representation, but please withdraw. Oh, because he kept continuing. That was the final straw. So the opposing party's lawyer has like 200 cases or something at a time, like full.
Oh, wow. Market.
Yeah. And so what he does is he plays this round robin where he prolongs cases. Like my case, this 2 year case has been going, it's been continued 12 times.
Oh my gosh.
And I've had two positive GAL reports as of September of last year.
GAL being guardian ad litem for those who aren't in family law. Yes.
Correct. Okay. Yes. So I've had two positive reports that say mom should have custody as of last year and it kept getting continued. And my lawyer, when I find out that there weren't discoveries, so, you know, he agreed to it being continued without asking me. And I was like, no, we're not continuing again and again and again. And he told me after the fact. And so I was just like, no, it's, I see where this is going.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. Cause I mean, you here you are in the middle of this incredibly stressful, trying and expensive environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did that feel? I guess from a couple of standpoints, I mean, number one, the lawyer just making a decision without consulting you. And then number two, the fact that the end result of that decision is that you have to live in this ball of stress of litigation for yet another chunk of time.
Right. Well, and my children, you know, I have a child that's suicidal, you know, because they hate living, you know, with their dad. I mean, so a child who's not eating, like there are actual like health and life risks that I can't go to anybody. You know, the therapist is being paid for by dad. They may be sympathetic, but they can't do anything. The guardian ad litem has already delivered their reports. They can't do anything. If my lawyer is not listening to me, they can't do anything. I can't really talk about it on social media. Where, I mean, there's nothing, you're, as a parent, I mean, it's frustrating and heartbreaking to know that the power structures that you thought were in place to help you aren't there. Like they don't exist. It's kind of like the idea of like the Constitution or justice. Right? Like when you're a kid, you think, oh, there's this magical box that makes things just magically be fair, right? Like in the movies.
Right.
And that just, family law, I've learned after having been in this for a decade, is entirely reliant on the individual attorneys making the right decisions.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't, at least I don't know what it is about my luck or me or my state, but I just keep running into, I don't know if it's, I don't want to say spineless. That sounds horrible, but spineless attorneys where, you know, I have an abusive ex-spouse who should have had his hand slapped 10 years ago. So I don't, I mean, I've had all kinds, I mean, I've had basically death threats. You know, I've had, I mean, all kinds of stuff. This is a man who has YouTube videos with guns. Like none of this behavior should have, the CPS, any of it should have happened. But because nobody caught it early, everybody said, just be nice, just be nice.
Right.
And now it gets to this big mess. Yeah, it's not so fair. It's not fair.
No, right. It's horrible. Right. And so many people's lives are in the balance. right? Absolutely. I mean, if not actual life, and maybe that too, certainly health and happiness and wealth and other things that you would hope to be able to pursue.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't have a home. My credit's a mess. I mean, you think, what does paying, you know, anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 a month in child support on top of legal fees, on top of maybe not being able to work as much because you're stressed, like all of that impact, you know, for me, and having started out, you know, I married at 18, divorced at 24, got nothing in that divorce because my lawyer settled, you know, and then constant litigation after that. And then another marriage that kind of ended about the same before I learned my lessons. Like, it adds up. Right. And a lot of women are in this circumstance. And then that's just disheartening. Like, from a bigger picture, I mean, more than my individual case, which is, you know, probably more than what you're asking for usually from, you know, legal clients. But someone shouldn't have to be filthy rich or be a lawyer to get their own justice in family law. And yet everybody I talked to, I mean, I talked to, you know, prosecutors I met or other lawyers or... And everyone's like, yeah, you know, once you make $250,000 a year, $500,000 a year, you can get whatever you want. It's like, okay, that's fine for me as somebody who can work really hard and get to that point, I guess. But how does that help the blue collar person working at Walmart? How does that help the middle manager who might peak at $60,000? That's not justice. It's not justice if you have to pay for it. Like, that's extortion. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of go, like, I vacillate in between, like, angry for myself, but then angry for everybody else. And I know nobody intends it for it to be that way. But there's no, like, I've never met a lawyer who makes that realization any easier. I don't know how a lawyer would, but it's systemically unfair and unjust.
Yeah, well, and it's this hard thing, right, where you talk about it. I know this is your husband's lawyer, but if he's our ex-husband's lawyer, mm-hmm. if he's carrying a caseload of 200 cases a year, or, you know, that's it would be hard to have time to come to any sort of broader realizations about the implications of the legal system.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's get back to the lawyer you're using now. Like, what are the things that it's a she, right?
Yes.
What are the things that she does that work well for you, that you like about working with her?
She's super personable. So she's more, a little bit closer to my age. So I'm just a little bit older than her, I think. But she's closer to my age. I can reach her by email or by text even. So sometimes I might even get like an emoji response, but it feels like I'm working with another professional as opposed to, like, it's not too cold. So that's nice. And she's a mom herself. And
okay.
So that I like. She does listen. So if I say, hey, this is my concern, she does take the time to say, hey, yep, I get it, you know, and here's what we're going to do. I may not always like how she responds, but, or I think COVID's odd because I think it's made everyone stressed. I think I've caught her once or twice where, like, me being someone, like, I'm a researcher, like, so I'm going to school for, like, paralegal studies and stuff. So, like, this is just my thing that I do because at this point I have no choice, right? To be passionate about family law and like helping my own case. Like, I've sent her things before and it was not well received because I think she, like, it probably came off as like, you don't know anything. I'm going to do your job for you. That I think is just working with lawyers. Lessons learned for me. But otherwise, so yeah, I like that she's personable. I like that she took my concerns seriously. And has always taken my concerns seriously once I can get a hold of her, and that she's responsive.
Right. I'm interested, though, I mean, in you know, the fact that you feel the need to do your own sort of legal research and and either to support or, you know, I guess another, and maybe this is what you're worried that it's the way she's taking it, to second guess some of the choices that the lawyer's making. At the beginning of working with her, did she like help you by like setting out, okay, this is the roadmap or these are the steps in your journey or,
no,
right?
I mean, no, I've never gotten that from any lawyer and I've had six or so at this point. Oh. No one has ever said, hey, I've always had to ask, how do you want documents? And, you know, what's going to happen next? And I'm constantly asking what's going to happen next because I'll hear just nothing. Like, no, I'm working on it. No, here's what to expect. Here's what happens if. Yeah, no one's given a roadmap of here's what the case looks like. Here's how we're preparing for what could happen, because lots of things can happen. You might settle. There might be, you know, whatever. I mean, lots of things happen in family law. I've never gotten a here's how to work with me. I've never gotten any kind of, like, here's the ways that you can get a hold of me and here's what you can talk to me about and here's what you can't. And, you know, none of that. Like, I've never gotten any of that. And I feel like that would be helpful.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like something, you know, in your profession as a marketer, I mean, you work with individual clients on a regular basis. I mean, how do you approach it professionally when you're onboarding a new client or doing a new web development or other project with them?
Right. Honestly, just as badly. I've actually thought about that with my own clients. And, you know, frankly, this has kind of taught me, hey, I need to outline, here's what the project looks like, and here's how to work with me, and these are my quirks, and here's where you go with questions. I try to include a project plan for things that are more fixed, like here's the deliverables, and this is what it will entail. But frankly, yeah, I'm no better. And I guess it takes being a client to go, oh, that would be nice.
Right, right. Well, and it's not easy, right? I mean, I can see where it feels like busy work. And it's one of those things that maybe the ounce of prevention is worth the pound of cure, but it's hard to find that ounce of prevention sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, so back to your lawyer, what are things that she does that frustrate you or that you would rather she not do or do differently?
I'm not sure how much research she's done, like looking at the documents. So I feel like, so my butt has been saved in court many times just because I've brought documents to court and like prepped myself, including one time where I was ordered to 60 days of jail and was able to get out of that because I was just talking about something with a judge had asked me, and the judge realized through my conversation that Title 4D was involved and he couldn't make consequences like he thought he could because Title 4D was actually actively involved in the child support enforcement. So that makes me nervous to not have, hey, you know what, I've looked at these, you know, it's a week before court or it's a month before court. I'm going to start looking at documents. You know, I may ask you, like, I've not gotten any of that. So
I don't mean to interrupt, but by research, do you mean legal research or like diving into the documents of the case or both?
Sorry, probably both, although more, sorry, prep. Preparation would be a better word, I think. So document preparation, like the facts of the case, preparing for the kind of oddball things my ex is likely to throw out because they always throw out random stuff. Although I don't know at this point because I haven't submitted discoveries and their motion to compel is over a week late. So who knows there if they'll even be able to throw crazy stuff out.
Right.
So yeah, so preparation, like I don't know how much she's done. I've given her stuff, but I don't know. Just getting general like updates, I have to ask. And then I feel like, okay, am I bugging her or not? Like I have to look at the time and go, okay, have I given sufficient time between the last day or the day before? So I kind of expected a little bit more communication in the month leading up to court, especially with this being a 4-hour hearing that's gone on for, you know, 2 years. I mean, for her, it's probably second hat, but for me, this is my life. You know, it goes wrong and I could have a dead kid, right? So, I mean, it's kind of like the expectations, like she may feel comfortable, but I'm not. And you know, one time she's like, well, don't stress about this stuff. And it's like, well, I can't not stress. Like, this is just, that's part of my preparation is stressing and thinking about the details. And then,
right.
You know.
Well, that's like, you know what, the best way to lose an argument with your significant other is to tell them to calm down.
Yes, exactly. It's not that big a deal. What do you mean?
Right.
Exactly.
And how are you paying her? Is she doing this flat rate or is she hourly or?
No,
or?
She's hourly.
Okay.
I think I've paid at least $5,000 at this point, just to her.
And when you get her bills, I mean, can you tell from the bill or are you even looking to see what she's working on?
Yes. So it's very clear. It comes from Clio. It looks like it's an automated thing that comes monthly. That's actually been really helpful to get, you know, that monthly and to see. And it's clear. You know, she's reasonable. It doesn't look like, you know, it's 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, half an hour here.
Got it.
It seems reasonable. And I can tell, like, the notes are clear and whatnot.
Oh, nice. Good.
Yeah.
Well, if you had a magic wand and you could just, like, make her into your version of super lawyer, wonder lawyer, whatever comic book superlative you want to use, I mean, what would that look like? What would your sort of ideal, perfect lawyer, you know, someone ripped from the... We always talk about in the legal profession that, you know, people have unrealistic expectations about the legal system because of what they see on television. So, you know, what would your television version of your lawyer look like?
Right. Oh, that's a good question. Probably, if I had to sum it up, more consultative, if that makes sense. So I would love to have someone I could sit down with, and I've only had one meeting with my current, with any, all of my lawyers, actually, you know, sit down and I guess actually have strategy and say, okay, these are the options. This is what we'd need, you know, but that's expensive. Of course, we'd have to take a look, but more strategy and more along the way, I guess, someone who's, who feels like they're invested in the success of my case as much as I am. Not that they're just, you know, billing and doing their job, but that, so like if at the beginning I could have like I talked before about a roadmap of, okay, this is the goal that you want. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm sure when I have money, I'll be able to get this kind of, you know, service, but this is the goal you want. This is probably how much it'll cost. These are the kinds of ways we could go about it. Okay. We've explored a path. Okay. Now that's going to take, I don't know, 6 months of litigation or a year of litigation. Maybe that means mediation sessions. Maybe that means sending a bazillion emails to the opposing party. Maybe that means a big old petition. I mean, there's lots of ways to go about a result that don't always involve trial. But, you know, I mean, to be able to strategize all the different ways to get to, you know, B or C, and working with me, okay, here's what I have. Here's, you know, the data I have. Here's what I know about my opposing party. Here's the outcomes I want. Here's what I'm willing to give and do. And then work with me month by month to get there and keeping me in the loop, asking questions, you know, me to have a way to share, like with my cases, there are lots, especially with my one ex, there's lots that happens, you know, it might be an exchange where like one exchange, I got threatened by my ex's mother, like, you know, finger in my chest, you know, another week, you know, my ex is saying he's not going to get them medical care because whatever, you know, so there's lots of things that happen. And I feel like it's just falling into a black hole. Like if I had, I almost feel like a team of people who were able to take that information and, you know, add it. And I knew that they were on it. And maybe if strategy needed to be shifted, we would shift. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, you've talked about, you know, a roadmap to get from A to B, but it sounds to me you're maybe talking about a roadmap to get from A to Z in terms of big picture, but then also like a micro strategy on how to get from A to B and then B to C,
right,
that sort of debriefs or at least takes into account like, oh, great. We thought that we would use, you know, I've got this Google Maps image in my head of not just, you know, where it says, okay, the most direct route is to take the interstate. But if you want to avoid toll roads, then there's this option. If
Absolutely.
You want to
right.
take the scenic route, there's this other option, right? And obviously, you don't want to take the scenic route with a divorce case or a custody battle. But
well, not necessarily. I mean, think about someone, or maybe not like in my one case, but I have, you know, there's another where he's living on his mom's money. That money would eventually run out. How do you chip away at somebody slowly to show that they're non-cooperative, which you know them to be non-cooperative, but you don't have the data to show it? That doesn't always have to involve trial. And I feel like the lawyers I've worked with haven't been able to think out of the box. You know, no one has said, let's try mediation. Mediation, as far as I know, is required in my state. No one said, let's sit down and try that. No one's asked me, hey, what could we wiggle on first?
Yeah.
I tell every lawyer.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I tell every lawyer I will pay to have custody of my kids. My kids are paramount. I'm already paying. Like, my bottom line stops with my kids, period. Right. I do not care about getting money. I do not care about punishing my exes. I give zero blips, right? I just want my kids. And no one has ever taken that information and said, maybe we can try to negotiate something. Let's find out what the opposing party wants. You know, what's the carrot? What's the stick? It's that kind of strategy where I'm thinking about those things, but my lawyers haven't. And I don't know if that's just because I'm in this all the time. I don't know if it's because there's not the budget for it. Like, that's where my black box is as a client, where it feels like there's only one way to work with a lawyer. And they all are like, well, we're just going to file this thing and go to court, and you're not going to hear anything in the meantime. And please don't bother me. And, you know, and hope that they're prepared. I don't know. It feels very strange.
Yeah.
So more consultative.
Right. Well, and I can understand. And it's, you know, I mean, I know a lot of lawyers, and I, you know, a lot of the lawyers I know do have a pretty good strategic mind. So, you know, it's entirely possible to me that the lawyers you've worked with have had some of that strategy, but it certainly isn't filtering down to you if they do.
Right.
Yeah. This is interesting because a lot of the people I talk with are looking back at the end or after the end of a matter, but you have a hearing coming up this week.
Yeah, probably.
How does that feel? Well, right.
Surreal. Like, on one hand, I hate, you know, I spoke about the answer diaries. I hate going to court because and I was trying to unpack the emotions of it. And I think it's the potential shame. Like, cause when I think about it, like logically, nothing that gets said or thrown around in court is something I don't know. Like, I keep every email, like I have like gigs of files. Like, I know what could possibly brought into court. I know the kinds of things they'll bring in. Like, logically, I know nothing that's said has any bearing really on my life other than my kids, right? So it's not like it's going to hurt my reputation. Like, these aren't public hearings. And anything that's decided that's negative, I know that, as far as I know from the appellate standards, I would win custody. So, I mean, I'm not even concerned there. But it still feels like there's that, like, the shame of opening your life up to perfect strangers and like having to explain things, because the questions are always like, it's just a weird, stressful thing. So I'm stressed about going to court because of that, but happy about going to court because it's like, okay, I will be more likely to get what I want because of all the rules my ex has broken and just how uncommunicative he is. And like, it meets all of the appellate standards, as far as I can tell, of like sole custody.
Right.
So for that, I'm happy, I guess, as opposed to settling. I'm frustrated because it will probably happen after all of this, as I'll get to court and right before the opposing party will want to settle for what we're already negotiating right now, and which is less than what I need to avoid going to court again. So it's hard to know what emotion I should land on because I don't know what's going to happen. Like,
right.
I don't know if I'm going to court on Friday. I don't know if I'm going to be in a hearing. It's supposed to be a 4-hour hearing, but with all the evidence and the motion to compel and the DCS, we might stop at half an hour, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the judge might say, yeah, I have enough. I don't know.
And has your lawyer worked with you much about what to expect or tried to set expectations?
No, none.
Hmm.
I don't know how the 4-hour here. I mean, I know enough to know that 2 hours is probably from one side, 2 hours for the other. Probably, since the guardian ad litem has already given their suggestions, that probably most of it will be talking about, is it going to be shared or full legal custody, and then the rest of it on financials. But no, I've not gotten any expectations. And again, it's Friday. So, and it's today's Tuesday. So
today's Tuesday. Yeah. So it's coming right up. Mm-hmm.
And no meeting either. I would have thought that there'd be a prep meeting, but no.
And are you, will you be appearing in person, which is a question that
I think so, yeah.
I wouldn't have had to ask before the COVID era, but different courts are treating this all very differently.
I believe so, yeah. I've not heard anything otherwise.
You haven't received instructions for a Zoom call or a WebEx meeting or anything like that.
Right. I should probably ask though, but yeah, I think it's in person.
Right. You've had multiple lawyers, but, you know, and I think based on not necessarily the outcome of your case, because we don't know the outcome of your case, right, but just your experience with the lawyer. You know, if you had to do it again, would you work with the same lawyer?
Maybe. Probably given the constraints, yes.
Right.
Because I don't think I have many other options. If I had more money, no. I think I would go with a bigger... Actually, you know what? No, I probably wouldn't, because I now know of a law firm that, just in passing conversations, they are completely appalled at what they're hearing. So,
okay.
So probably not, actually.
Okay.
I would go with the larger firm.
And so then some similar question. I mean, would you recommend your lawyer to a good friend if they were going through something similar to what you are, or even something simpler than what you are?
Simpler, yes. I think that my cases are particularly tough. And I don't wish my case on anybody. Right. Most people aren't in the situation I'm in, it would seem. Right. So yes, I would. I would still. Okay. I think she's capable and, you know, completely competent and totally personable and affordable. So,
oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this based on what you've talked about already, but did your matter take longer than expected, shorter than expected, or about what you expected in terms of the timeline?
Much longer than expected.
Yeah.
Especially with the 12 continuances and, you know, right, the positive reports so early. Yeah. I mean, COVID, so I was supposed to have a hearing in April. It's now July. So it probably would have been settled already, but definitely longer than, I mean, it started with an emergency hearing for custody. So the fact that an emergency motion turned into this is amazing.
So that emergency started 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was an emergency motion for you know, child support and custody. Thankfully, my income has gone up since then. It's like doubled, but yeah.
Well, well, and so then I think I know the answer to this too, but in terms of cost, did it cost more, less, or about what you expected?
Probably about what I expected. I mean, this, well.
Was it something that you ever budgeted for? Did you get cost estimates up front? I mean, did you have a sense of what you would have to spend for this type of work?
No, I've really taken it as it's come. This is the most expensive I've spent, but it's not as expensive as I've heard other people have spent. No, I mean, I don't have savings or credit. It comes off of living expenses, and I just cut or work extra. At the end of the day, my kids are worth everything, and
right,
it'll cost what it costs. And if I have to, and this is where my life, I mean, I used to not be able to get hired at Walmart, and I worked my way up. You know, I will earn as much as I need to get my kids, and that's really my driving force. So I probably need to find a new driving force when I get full custody. But of all my children, it costs what it costs. But yeah, it
right,
a little bit more than I would have expected. I mean, we're at what, 13,000, I think. And that's not counting child support payments and stuff. Right. If I had sat down before and said, what can 13,000 get me? I certainly would have expected more than this.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. How often, if at all, did your lawyer or someone on your team just sort of check in on you to see how you're doing?
Never. No, I'm always the one asking.
Yeah.
Where are we at? Or, hey, this thing happened and this is frustrating and here's why. And what are we doing about this? And yeah, no, never.
And would that have been something you appreciated?
Yeah, I think so.
Would it have mattered if it were on the clock or not?
No. I mean, if they're checking in like every week and billing it as half an hour, yeah, that'd be annoying. But at the same time, it'd be a chance for me to vent and like, hey, here's what happened. Like if it was like a weekly, like, hey, let's touch base. Kind of, I want to feel your temperature, you know, check your temperature, see where you're at. Tell me what new has gone on. You know, make notes, take action if need be. I'd be fine with that. It would be money well spent.
Okay. Do you think your lawyer's given you good advice?
I'm not sure I've gotten advice.
Interesting.
Over the course of my whole like dealing with lawyers, no, I've gotten bad advice. I've gotten stuff that I've later found just in my own, like looking at the statutes isn't correct. Gotten answers myself.
Right.
You know, things that I knew were, that I later found out were just like wrong. Although one of my lawyers, like his law school now doesn't even exist. So, you know, it is funny.
No, is that, there might be a few more of those after this most recent downturn. But...
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But not for the same reasons. Those are financial.
Right.
You know, right. Not, you know, people can pass the bar exam. You know.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Has your lawyer, your current lawyer or any of your lawyers ever asked you for feedback during the course of working with them?
No, never.
And have they asked you to even like give them testimonials or reviews? I mean, again, you're not all the way done yet, but okay.
No, none of them use any kind of marketing. Yeah. Other than like a website and the same kind of website everybody uses. You can slap different names on a lawyer's website and it's exactly the same. I mean, it's like IT consulting firms. Yeah, they're all about the same. Slap a different picture on. Everybody's got the same legalese and SEO keywords and doesn't feel human.
Well, so, I mean, this is an interesting opportunity. I mean, you are a professional marketer. What would you, you know, if you had a lawyer as your client, and I think you do have a few, but how would you recommend that they structure things, both in terms of their marketing, but also, you know, how, because your marketing is just the front part, right? You have to deliver on it. So,
right.
What recommendations would you make to a lawyer, you know, a generic lawyer, family law client of yours in putting their sort of marketing, branding, messaging packages together?
First of all, I would strongly suggest, and of course specializes, so think of that as a general word, not like certified, specialized in terms of like legal.
Right, yes, but our funny lawyer
focus,
words.
Yes, yeah. Focus on family law. Let's say that. Dare to focus on family law first and foremost. It's definitely discouraging when you try to find a family lawyer and they also do like DUIs and, you know, other things on the side, which they probably do for financial reasons, but I feel like it's a catch-22.
Right.
If you're strong in family law and why you're doing family law, you'll find good clients or your good clients will find you and you also get better results and all. Like, it kind of feeds into itself. But first and foremost, if I had, you know, a family law client, be okay. As much as you can focus, make this the focus of your marketing and your website. I would immediately say to have a call to action that is a funnel. So, you know, look at what the ambulance chasers are doing. You'll see that they have, you know, ebooks and guides and checklists and whatnot. Pick something like that to grow your email list and give value up front so people can see your philosophy and your why.
right.
and your approach. Because again, back to my point before, I mean, I could probably evaluate 100 family law websites and they're all exactly the same. You know, I probably could do a Copyscape search, and I bet a lot of it is about the same. I don't know if a family lawyer, like looking at most websites, I don't know if the lawyer's aggressive or not. I don't know if they're going to be more collaborative. I don't know what their approach is. I don't know if they're going to be right for me or not. I don't know if our values are going to jive. Like, for example, I'm a Jewish convert. It's important for me not to find someone who's, say, strongly evangelical who thinks I've like thrown away Jesus, right? Like, they're not going to fight for me. I'm also LGBT. Like, is the person going to be friendly and fight for me, or are they going to kind of throw me under the bus? Why are they in family law? Are they doing it because, frankly, they can't do anything else, which I see more often than I'd like? Or are they doing it because they're passionate about it and they're passionate about children or about, you know, family outcomes?
Right.
You know, things like that I don't ever see on family law marketing. Like, I never see, or even just lawyer marketing, I don't ever see, okay, why are you in this? The closest one I've seen is a guy here in Indiana. I'm allowed to say this, I think. His name is Avon Wamsley. I'm sure many people have probably heard of this guy, right? He starts his marketing by saying he was in a, you know, terrible car crash, and that's why now he fights for victims.
That's a great message.
Yeah, I'm glad he's doing well now, and he appears to be, you know, fully mobile and in good health, and I'm glad for that. But from a marketing perspective, it's perfect. He knows what it's like, and he talks about that. I know what it's like to fight the insurance companies, and I know what it's like to have all these medical bills, and I will fight for you. And that's why he's so, I mean, I know his name. That's why he's so successful, because that's just a simple little story. And I never get that from family lawyers. Like, no one says I'm in this because, I say no one, but in my state, I've not seen like, this is why I'm in it. And this is my approach. And, or even more, here's how you work with me. But anyway, back to your question, I would focus, start including more of your why and what makes you different, because you're not going to be right for every client. If you are more aggressive and that's your natural approach, talk about it. Because for someone like me going, you know, having to fight an abusive ex, I need somebody who's going to be my bulldog, because they don't respect power structures. So I need somebody who's going to be able to, you know, be that fence and that barrier for me. But if you're not, you might be better for somebody who doesn't want to go and punish their ex or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So you'll attract clients that fit.
Yeah. Relationships fail for any number of reasons, good and bad and otherwise. And
absolutely.
Yeah,
what might be a perfect consultant or client for one person may not be for another. And but be transparent about that, and you'll attract people who, you know, potential clients that are actually going to want what you have to offer and who you are.
Well, it's interesting. I'm going to say, you know, you referenced ambulance chasers, and I think a little bit tongue in cheek, but you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, to my friends who are personal injury lawyers.
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to offend.
But it's interesting because there is that sort of public, right? And they know it, right? They've fought it all their whole careers. However, they also understand the power of marketing, I think, better than a lot of other.
Marketing well. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you just gave a great example of things that you've seen from this PI lawyer that is about storytelling, and, you know, maybe he has some funnels or some lead magnets or other things, right? To walk people along the process and let the potential client get to know the lawyer using the lawyer's materials rather than spending time on the phone with the consultation or in person or whatever else, right? There's lots of ways to get people familiar with you.
Bankruptcy lawyers and personal injury lawyers I've found do the best.
Interesting.
You know, they seem, at least the ones that, you know, everybody knows, you know, they are spending money on marketing. They're doing ads, they're doing direct mail. They've at least got a funnel.
I mean, it sounds to me like they've worked on their message, right?
Yes.
They understand their why. They understand who their target is and what sorts of language is going to speak to those people. And, and you know, maybe the flip side of that is they're also happy to go ahead and filter some people out, right? If they realize it's not a good fit, that's part of marketing too.
Yep. They seem more comfortable with that and saying, this is what we do and this is all that we do and this is who we help and this is why. Yeah. I think other segments of law could, you know,
could learn from that.
Yeah.
Well, I may have to have you back on one of my other podcast episodes that isn't the voice of the client, and we can talk more about legal marketing strategy. But for now, I just want to say thank you so much for your feedback and your honesty and your openness in talking about your experiences. I really do hope that lawyers will be able to listen and learn from these experiences. So thank you.
Thank you.
And good luck with your hearing on Friday as well. I will definitely hold good thoughts for you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So, wow. I hope you find that interview as enlightening as I did. There's a quotation I recently learned from the poet Donald Hall, though he attributes it to the sculptor Rodin. It goes like this. Never think of a surface except as the extension of a volume. I think that's good advice when dealing with people, especially new clients. And no doubt, there are genuine red flags that can come up for lawyers when you're working with a new or potential client. But I think it's important to ask yourself if there's something more underneath. As for that case update I promised, the court awarded Lynn full custody of her children a few days after we recorded this interview. The Agile Attorney Podcast is hosted by me, John Grant, and is a production of Agile Attorney Consulting and the Agile Attorney Network. For more takeaways from this episode, be sure to follow my blog at agileattorney.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at JEGrant3, on LinkedIn as The Agile Attorney, and on Facebook under The Agile Attorney Network, where you can also join our Facebook group. Be sure to subscribe to The Agile Attorney Podcast in your favorite podcast player, and I know all the podcasters ask for it, but it really makes a difference for new podcasts, so please take just a moment to rate and review me as well, especially on the Apple Podcast app. If you have questions or comments about this episode or anything having to do with Agile for Lawyers, I'd love to address them in a future episode. Go to agileattorney.com/podcast to record a voice memo or find out other ways to get in touch with me. I'll be back next week with another Voice of the Client interview. Until then, be well and stay safe.